So let's just get right into it. Today we're going to continue in my series that I was working on last summer in the Ten Commandments. So we were working through this idea that the commandments are kind of like a guideline for life. And I've been using the metaphor or analogy of a board game. That games have a goal in them, just as the Christian life has a goal. That goal is to live with Christ in eternity. So also a board game may have a goal, such as to earn 10 points in a game of Settlers of Catan or take out the opponent's king in a game of chess. And that the game doesn't work without rules to define how you accomplish the goal. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of people scrambling on a table. But with the rules, we gain guidelines and direction towards how to accomplish the goal, which is what makes it a game. And so in the same way, the Christian life, I suggest, has some rules or guidelines or boundaries in which we achieve the goal. So it's not that there are multiple ways to Christ, but there is one way with a specific set of guidelines or rules that we get there. And so I've been pulling on the Ten Commandments as our general guidelines. And that's sort of been the concept of this series. So today, parents, you will have to resist the urge to cheer as we go through the fifth commandment, children, obey your parents. And I was very tempted to come up and just say, children, obey your parents, and then walk away and call that a sermon. But I'm not going to do that. There is a lot to this this commandment. And I've actually been really surprised if you've been here. Sorry, just I'm not OCD, but this really was bugging me. There we go. Okay, so so there was refocus. So the last time I spoke on the Sabbath, and some of you may remember when I spoke on that one of the things about that commandment was I had misunderstood the idea of Sabbath for so long, and then when I studied it and prepared for this sermon, I discovered how much I misunderstood about the Sabbath. And so I was very excited to preach that to you. A same thing has happened here. I've always viewed this commandment, children obey your parents, as specifically at children, for children, to children, and only about them. And I have been sadly misinformed, and I hope that if any of you are in that same misinformation, you get to enjoy today's sermon in being instructed that this commandment's actually for everybody. Parents, children, those who aren't yet parents, those who are still sort of in that stage between parent and child. We call those young adults. We meet Sunday nights. It's a support group. So we're going to get into this. Now, as I was explaining my metaphor about the board games, when you approach a game, there are three ways in which you approach the rules of the game. And these three approaches have been hotly debated in many gaming circles. Now, I know a lot of you aren't gamers, so I apologize for that. But my experience in the game store showed me a lot of debating over rules in the games. And the way that people debated was always based off of three concepts. That was the rule as it's written, the rule as it's intended, and the rule that is corrected or errata by the makers of the game. So the rule as intended is called often in the gaming circles RAI. Rule as intended is what was the intention behind the rule? The problem is we have to guess that based on we read the rule and then we try to sort of figure out the intention behind it. The rule as written is the raw, which is what are the exact words being used? And then the last one is the errata, which is what does the actual rule writer, the guy who made the game, the guy who designed this whole thing, what are his thoughts and inputs? So I've been kind of basing my structure off of this idea. Now today, however, I've kind of messed with it a little bit. So we are going to look at the rule as intended as best I can. Is what I grasp that the intention behind the law of children obey your parents is all about. We're going to look at the rule as written. We're going to do a little bit of a word study into the word obey. And we're going to look into what the concept of in the Lord means. And finally, the errata. Now, I'm kind of playing with the errata the whole way through this sermon. So in the errata, instead of doing what does God say uniquely or differently than what we've already picked up on the law, because I don't think we're going to be that far off, instead, I'm going to actually take that opportunity to give an errata myself. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the youth culture that's currently in existence. So I'm going to kind of provide an opportunity to educate a little bit. Not tell you how to parent, but just a little bit of education about what youth go through and what they're currently struggling with and what kind of things are happening in our youth culture. Just as a way of informing you. That's just me pulling on a little bit of my expertise. I don't have any expertise. Pulling on my area of study, which is teenagers. So I'm going to kind of come from that angle. So I hope that makes sense and you can track along with me on that. So let's first just take a look at the law itself. I want to look at the wording. We find this law in three places. Before we jump into the rule as intended, we find it in three places. We find it in Exodus chapter 20, where I had a sticky note that marked my page. There we go. Exodus chapter 20, it's in verse 12, and it says, "Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you." Now, the word there, honor your father and mother, it's a very similar Hebrew word to the word that they would translate as obey. So it's quite close. Honor your father and mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord has given you. You might notice that this is the first law with a promise. The second place that we find this law written, and it's written a little bit differently, is in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy means the law revisited or the law again. So Deuteronomy chapter 5, the law is re-established, and it says in verse 16, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Okay, so this first command, this first command with a promise, the promise is that when you obey or honor your parents, you will live long in the land that your parents, or that the God has given you. I'm not OCD. It's really bugging me. So, don't laugh with me, Ian. It pulls me off topic. So it's the law that we are to honor our parents, and with this we'll have long life. And we often like to stop at the long life part. Another way of reading it is that we will do well in the land the Lord has given us. Basically, the command to obey our parents or honor our parents is tied with how our lives will go. Will it go well for us in the land that God has given us, or will it go poorly for us in the land that God has given us? And it is largely tied to how we treat and respect our parents, children. Now, there's a third place we find this passage, this law, and it's in the New Testament. And this is normally what I would do as the errata, the New Testament. But this is integral to our understanding of this law. And so we're going to jump to the New Testament in Ephesians chapter 6, and we're going to sit there for most of our sermon today. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, it says this, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth." Now, we all like to stop there, parents, but there's verse 4. We need to check that as well. "Fathers, do not exasperate your children." Exasperate? Yes, I said that right. "Exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." That is an integral, tied together part. That is a single thought. Paul did not finish the first thought about obeying your parents, leave a little bit of a break, and then add in. This is tied together. We're going to get into that a little bit more. Rule as intended. Bearing the image. Last week, Chris talked about how we are image bearers. That the way in which we engage in our society, our culture, our community, is that we bear the image of Christ and we must live out that image, and people will see his image in us and recognize that we are his people, the Christians, okay? In the same way that we each bear an image, so also the family bears an image. The whole unit of the family bears an image. The family unit reflects the divine family. The earthly family is a reflection of the divine family. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Mother, father, children. In the same way that people see within us individually Christ's image, when they look at our families, do they see the Trinity? Do they see God? Do they see a reflection of the divine? Or do they see maybe something less? I think so often the reflection we portray, not just individually but also as a family, is one that's kind of like through a muddy puddle. I don't have to stretch far for us to see some of the brokenness. But I want to point out where I'm right here. If we pull back in Ephesians a little bit, we see a very good picture of what the family unit should look like, according to what Paul says. It says, "Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord." So So let me continue. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. So just as, I've skipped a piece. Oh, I did it in the wrong order. There we go. Wives are to submit to your husbands, just as the church submits to Christ. See that the marriage relationship is a reflection of the church with Christ, the divine relationship. Husbands, love your wives. It says this. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Just as Christ was willing to die for the church, Christ died for the church, did everything he could for the church, so also, well, husbands, you are to do everything you can for your wife. You are to sacrifice yourself for your wife. You are to love your wife as Christ loved the church. This is a reflection of the divine. Children, obey your parents. This is all in the same section of Ephesians. The chapters and verses were added by humans, and so we often like to end chapter 5 and go, cool, that was chapter 5. What does chapter 6 have for us? But the thought that Paul is following of the husband loving the wife as Christ loved the church, the wife submitting to the husband as the church submits to the Father, to Christ, children obeying their parents, this is all the same thought, just as Christ obeys the Father. Just as Jesus, who sat in the Garden of Gethsemane the night of his betrayal, the day before his death, and he says, if this cup could be taken from me, take it. But it's your will, not my will. He obeys the Father. So children should also obey their parents. So for children, youth, young people, this is actually a divine command, a reflection of the divine relationship. Jesus could obey his heavenly Father and his earthly parents, except for that one time we don't like to talk about it. He was 12. He was preaching in the synagogue. His parents didn't know. It was a bit of a miscommunication. It wasn't disobedience. Not trying to make an excuse for you. Okay, we're going to stop there. So children obey because Christ obeyed. Or obeys. That's present tense. And then finally, we don't want to leave out that last bit. Parents are to equip their children. You're to be parents who provide an opportunity for your children. Set an example for them to be like Jesus was, to fulfill a purpose. Just as the Father equipped the Son. Now, I thought about this one a lot. Father equipping the Son. I thought about how did the Father equip the Son? Jesus is fully God, and so he was already fully equipped. And yet, there's an aspect where Jesus was not called into his ministry until he was 30 years old. 30 years before it was his time. In the Gospel of John, he frequently uses that phrase, it's not yet my time. And 30 years, he waited for his time, so that he could grow in maturity, he could grow in stature, he could be fully equipped to do the ministry that he was put on earth to do. 30 years. Young adults makes a lot more sense now, I don't know. So, this is our mandate as a family. This is our mandate as parents and children, to obey our parents as Christ obeyed, to equip our children as God equips. This is our mandate. And yet in so many ways, it's a muddy reflection in a puddle. In so many ways, we don't meet up to this expectation. And I'm speaking with you on this. I'm not, you're not living up to this. We, as a world, community, a church, we do not always live up to this. So let's get into some of the details of the passage. I want to get into a word study on the word obey. The word obey in the Greek comes from a Greek word, I wrote down how to pronounce it from Chris, akouo, which is where we get the word acoustic from. Akouo. It means to listen attentively. It means to listen attentively. Or another translation of it could be by implication to heed or conform to authority. To do that, we'd have to add a little prefix to the word akouo. And then we'd see hippakouo, which would mean to heed or conform to authority by the implication of that authority. The Hebrew word in Genesis 20 is sama, which means to be heard or to listen. So the concept of obedience is directly tied to listening. I have this great book. Actually, I don't have it anymore. That's not true. I don't have it anymore. I lent it to somebody and never got it back. And then I moved to Alberta, and I don't know if I'll ever get it back now. The book is called How to Talk So Teens Will Listen, and Listen So Teens Will Talk. And if you, by the way, if you have teens or about to have teens or any of that kind of stuff, and you're like, I just need a really good resource, and you're okay with reading books, this book is fantastic. It is really good, well-written, blew my mind, and I don't even know anything about teens or have teens. I know a little bit. Good book. But the concept, one of the concepts in it was, first of all, being someone who does listen, active listening, learning how to listen well. Now, we all want our teens or our kids to talk to us and tell us things. So there's an aspect of learning how to be a listener for your kids. But also, if we want our kids to be obedient, they need to be able to listen to us as parents. And so I loved the concept of this, the very title of this book, How to Talk So Teens Will Listen. How do we become communicators in such a way that our children can listen? And we become obeyable because we communicate to them in a way that they can understand and then obey. So there's an aspect of obedience in which listening is closely linked. Children, listen actively and attentively to your parents. In this, you will have long life in the land the Lord has given you. Listen attentively and carefully and actively to your parents. In the same way, I would suggest parents communicate clearly and to your children in their language, in the way that they can listen. Help them to be listeners. But who am I to tell you how to parent? Let's move on. The next concept in here is in the Lord. In Ephesians chapter 6, it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Obey your parents in the Lord. Count on Paul to throw in a little caveat on there to throw it off on us. Because we're like, oh yeah, just obey your parents. That's easy. In the Lord, what does that mean? Oh boy. In the Lord is a call. This concept of in the Lord. In the Lord refers to that which is done in the image of Christ. So if we are image bearers, then the in the Lord means with that correct image present, obey your parents. And I would suggest that in the Lord is a call to both children and parents in this passage. So I'm going to use a little bit of grammar magic. And if we said, obey your parents, comma, in the Lord, then the children are the subject of the in the Lord. So they're the ones who are being told in the Lord to obey. And so to children, obey as Christ obeys, as I pointed out in my cool thing earlier where it's all like a, what do you call that? That's like a sweet graph thing where it's like a table. It's a table. Insert table on word in here. Table. And it's obey as Christ obeyed. So it is a call first for children to recognize that they must be in the Lord, that they must have the image of Christ on them, and that they must act as Christ did in obedience towards their father or their mother, as Christ was obedient to the Heavenly Father. And so we are to obey as Christ obeyed. It's a call to you to be in the Lord. That's for you, youths. There's like five of them right there. 6, 7, 8. There's a lot of youths in here today. Lots of kids. Look, I can just like obey because Christ obeyed. You're not better than Jesus. And if it worked for him, I promise you it'll work for you in most cases. Based on the second part of the in the Lord. I think it's also a call to parents. To lead as the Father leads. If we are to obey as in the Lord, then the parent who we are obeying had better be also in the Lord and leading as the Father leads. So, well, youth, I strongly, strongly encourage you to lead as the, or to obey as Christ obeyed, because you're not better than Christ, and Christ, it worked for him, and it'll work for you. If your parent is not in the Lord, and they are leading you away from that which is good, towards that which is very ungood, you are to obey within in the Lord. And parents, if you are leading in such a way that is away from the Lord, if you look at your own image and you don't see an image of God in the way that you lead, maybe repentance is a good start. Not that I want to be too confrontational, that's not my intent. Parents are to lead as the Father led. We are to be spiritual leaders. I was thinking about my generation. I think about a lot of this kind of generational stuff. My generation is in an interesting place. We are one of the first generations to perform another exodus. Not like a chapter 20 of Exodus, where we left a country, but we are all leaving the church. My generation is in mass exodus from the church. You see, I think a huge part of it comes down to how the family operates. Parent to child, child to parent. In my generation, we were given awesome parental examples of how to have a good work ethic, how to be good sportsmen and play sports well and be good at winning and losing. We had great examples on teamwork, good examples of global care, making initiatives into global warming and all that kind of stuff. That was all during my generation as a child. That was going on. This was a big deal. We had good examples this way. Social justice is a huge issue now that has exploded in the past 20 years. But what we did not have is strong spiritual examples. Many of us experienced parental failure in the role of spiritual example. Some of you may not have had spiritual example laid out by your parents. Parents, you need to lead as the Father led. Set a spiritual example for your family. Be the image that they can then see Christ through you so that they know what that looks like in their lives. My cousin and I had a debate a couple weeks back. He was talking about not wanting to have kids. He was complaining about how it's not possible to have kids on a single income or whatever else. It's not financially feasible. And I said, well, finances don't really matter in the end. Once you have kids, you just deal with it. You know, my wife and I weren't planning on having kids, and we got kids, and we're like, well, okay, we'll figure this out. We just have figured it out. It hasn't always worked out. It hasn't always been smooth and easy, but our kids are alive. They're eating. They're healthy. They're not so healthy today. They're homesick. They're mostly healthy, and we continue on, and now we're here, and we're in a great community, and we're doing well. And my cousin said, no, you need financial stability to give your children the best life possible. I don't want to bring a child into this world if I can't give them the best life possible. And I said, the best life doesn't require money. The best life possible requires spiritual guidance and leadership. The best life needs God. Best life needs Jesus. It doesn't need money. So parents, yes, sportsmanship's important. Work ethic is important. Teamwork, global care, social justice, these things are important. But they are none of them as important as a spiritual leadership in your home and an image that your children can look to for in their own life, an image that is an image of Christ. You are an image bearer, and your family is a bearer of the image of the divine. Establish a good image. Now, that is what this law is about. And I could probably end the sermon there and be pretty happy with that. But I'd like to take a moment to do an opportunity for me to kind of speak to you from my personal heart and my area of study, which is about youth culture. It just got serious. And I want to start off by saying this. I'm not a parent to teenagers. I'm not currently a parent to elementary age kids. And I'm hardly a parent to 4-year-olds. Because you can't parent those things. They're like cats. They're crazy. I am not speaking here at you. That's probably the way I should say it. I'm not speaking at you. I'm not trying to tell you how to parent. I don't have, in my opinion, the qualification or authority to instruct you on how to be a parent. What I am to you, I hope, is your ally. I'm your youth pastor. That's why I'm here. I'm not here to just be there for your kids. I'm actually here for the parents as well. I want to be on your side. And I hope that so far in the past 2 years, I've exampled that I'm on your side. And if I haven't, I'm sorry, and please come talk to me about it. I am here to help you be the best parent you can be. Not by telling you how to do it, just by being a resource in whatever way I can. I have a very direct heart for teenagers to see them develop and grow into young men and women of God. And the number one most impactful place where that happens is in the home, not in the church. It starts at home with you, where you bear the image. You establish the norm in their life. And if it's not God, it may not be a very positive norm in the end. We do things in our church like Freedom Session. And Chris and I see people who need counseling frequently. Counseling is the fastest growing medical industry in North America, because so many of us did not have strong homes, and our norms that were established are not healthy. Now, to equip you parents, here's some of what I can help you with at equipping. And I've actually talked about this about a year and a half ago when I got to do a sermon specifically about youth culture. I talked about some of this. So I'm going to do a sort of a summed up version of some of this. If you're a parent of teens or about to be a parent of teens or one day might be a parent of teens, I sure hope this can be helpful to you. If you're not a parent of teens, my encouragement to you, while this may not be as helpful to you, this stuff is very useful in interacting with teens that are maybe your grandkids, interacting with teens at our church, or coming alongside and being a youth leader in our youth group, which, by the way, there's no age limit on that. Well, yes, there is. You have to be older than a youth. But there's no age limit in terms of maximum. So if you're like, I don't know where I fit, I want to help people, I really like kids, but I don't really know how to... Youth group, come talk to me. Okay, so now that my plug is done, there's a whole bunch of stuff about teenagers that some of us tend to overlook. First of all, teenagers age about 12 to 18 are in a constant state of change and development. They are in so much flux of change that we often as adults get incredibly frustrated with them. So I'm hoping here to educate you a bit in such a way that you can understand some of where they're coming from. Hopefully. Feel free to tell me I'm wrong later. Totally okay with that. I'm basically getting most of this from books. Like I said, I haven't parented teenagers yet. But I do work with teens sometimes. So first thing that's going on, they are changing physically. I don't need to tell most of you that. When they hit about 12 years old, they hit their first growth spurt, especially boys around 12 to 14 hit a massive growth spurt. Throughout their time as teenagers, they don't actually just only hit a spurt and grow and then stop growing for a while. They are in constant growth. Their bones actually grow at different rates and different parts of their body all at different times. So there are times where you will see kids walking with all kinds of weird whatevers. They stumble, they knock things over. Teenagers are legendarily clumsy. Right? I mean, I don't know how many of you parents have come and talked to me and told me how clumsy your children are. When they are teenagers, that is actually just their body growing at weird angles. There are legitimate medical, I shouldn't say medical because I'm not a doctor or a nurse and I'm going to get Sarah after me later if I do that. There are legitimate reports of people, of teenagers, having different length arms, different length legs, all sorts of things. Their back is all kind of weird because it's still growing and adjusting to this sudden change. And so slouching is quite normal for teenagers as they're getting used to their size differences. Walking and running coordination, that's all kind of weird and funny. I get to watch all those great like sports fails and stuff when kids go to like kick a ball and they completely miss it. Or they're running and they trip before they ever even get there. That's just, their body is not used to movement yet. And so have some patience with your clumsy children. They're trying. They really are. They just don't know how because their bodies are weird. Also, I might mention really quickly, they call this in one of the books I read that they're going through a time of a hormonal explosion. And so that's what's causing the body changes, is the hormones, as well as a bunch of other things. And it's a time of just explosion. And when there's an explosion happening, I mean, there's a certain part of it where you kind of have to have a shield or you might get burned. But parents, go in bravely. I trust you. You're awesome. You can handle this. Next, they're changing cognitively. Again, part of the hormones is that they're coming in, they're messing with the brain. And so there's an emotional concept that comes in. But actually, the big change cognitively is this. Children from age about 5 or so until they're about 11, 10, 11. Again, this is all just generalization of terms, of times and ages. This changes. Every kid is kind of different, right? But in general, about age 5 to 11, kids develop what's called operational sensory thinking or cognitive. Operational sensory is the type of cognitive process that they use. It's basically saying practical thinking. They learn how to pick up a book, open a book, read the book, close the book, put the book down. Operational sensory thinking, okay? They can learn how to use a slide and things slide down it. Well, that's cool. They can learn how to use all kinds of tools and things, but they learn how. It's all the how, the practical sensory learning. There's a significant shift that happens when they become teenagers into something called abstract thinking. Their thinking changes from how do I do something to why. Their thinking begins to say, why does this matter? Why does this even exist? Why do I exist? What is the purpose of the universe? The thinking of a teenager explodes from just being, how do I do this, to why? What? What is out there? Why is this even the thing? What does any of this matter? They are in a time of constant question, answers, and seeking out truth. And it's so hard for us as parents and youth workers to watch as they struggle with the questions of life. It is not uncommon in this time for a teenager to set aside and kind of suspend all concept of morality, ethics, and beliefs while they ask the questions. It is not uncommon for them to say, well, yeah, I think I believe in God, but I'm going to kind of just settle that over here as this concept, and I'm going to ask the whys and hows and whats about these concepts over here. Because this is a time in which they are developing the ability to think abstractly. So parents, do not be discouraged when your child is unsure or asking questions about something that you think is fundamental. They are just exploring abstract thought. They are just trying to figure it all out. And it's complicated and it's weird, and you were there once. And I'm sure you may remember it. I hope you remember it. I do. It was weird. And it sucked sometimes. I remember I was in the vehicle with my parents one day. I wasn't going to tell this story, but why not? I was in my vehicle in the truck with my dad, my mom. We were on our way to get an award I had earned, the Chief Scout Award. And I was going to get that for Scouts Canada. And we were on our way, and I was sitting in the back, like, fold-down, crappy seats in the back of a Ford Ranger. I don't know if any of you guys know, they're, like, really, you know, like, angled, and, like, it's really uncomfortable. We were in that for 4 hours. I had to sit in there. I was like, I'm getting the award. Why can't I have the comfy seat? Anyways, the topic of Christianity came up, and at the time, my dad was working as a missionary, and my mom was very involved in our church, and I said, well, you know, I'm kind of thinking of being more factual about, you know, how I'm approaching life, and I'm kind of exploring some other things. I'm not sure about this God thing, and my dad was like, straight on the brakes, like, I will turn this truck around. What do you mean? There's no other option but God. There was, scared God back into me. So even though I never brought it up with my parents again, I still was thinking that way. It actually shut down the conversation. And yet I was at that moment really saying, I don't get it all. Help me understand. I'm trying to ask the questions of why. But rather than continue the conversation was shut down. And that is so often our approach as adults when something that we consider fundamental is questioned. We just want to shut it down. No, no, you got to believe this. That's no other option. It's non-negotiable. This is one of the non-negotiables under my roof. Because this is my roof, my rules, my non-negotiables. Am I getting it right there, kids?
Yeah.
When you become a parent, you also learn these words. They come out like a second language now. Like, I talk to my children, it's like a second language. All of a sudden, I have parent. I don't even know how to, parentees. It just develops. If something happens when your children are born, all of a sudden you develop the ability to be fully fluent in parentees. I'm learning. Keep the conversation going. Remember, the concept of obey your parents requires listening. It requires being someone who can be listened to. I would encourage you to not shut down the conversation, but engage in it. Talk about it. Hear the questions they're asking. There are so many questions that teenagers have. I had a great time. I'm not going to name anyone because they're, you know, yeah. But after youth group one night, we do after youth, most youth group nights we do like after youth, which is like if kids can get themselves home, they can stay as late as they want. So if they have a driver's license, they can hang out here until whenever they decide to leave. And then I get home usually after youth group about midnight. And we hang out here, play butcher tag like we did last Friday, or we have some awesome in-depth conversations, or we talk about the most recent memes on YouTube or something. But we had one day where one of the youth came to me and he basically went, okay, Andrew, Why would God create sinful humans if he knew they were going to be sinful? Like, why? Why would he even let us, like, even, why didn't he just not create us sin? Like, wouldn't that make more sense if he knew it was all going to go bad? Why just stop the train before it gets there, you know? And great question. And so we ended up having this conversation that led into more questions. And we probably talked for probably 30, 40 minutes, maybe more. And we were in the kitchen. I was actually in there to wash a cup or something. He comes in and asks me the question. So we just right there start talking about it. And also we had this crowd in the kitchen as people like gathered and the two of us are talking. And at one point he finally just goes, okay, my brain's going to explode. I'm done. And I'm like, all right, we're good. But we had this great conversation and everyone's gathering around to hear because these aren't just questions of one person. These are the questions of the teens. These are the questions of our culture. These are the questions of our youth. They're thinking abstractly. They're asking a lot of questions. Field those questions. Don't just give them a solid answer and shut the conversation down. Engage. It's so powerful. And youth, ask the questions. We need to know. We don't always know what the questions are anymore. As adults, we kind of set our thinking in place. Actually, by the time you hit young adulthood, about 21 on, you have already set in place what your beliefs, your morals, your ethics will be. For the most part, they do not change much after that stage. For the most part. They can. They absolutely can by force of will and some hard work. But generally, once you've established what your morality and your beliefs are going to be, about 20 years old, 21 years old, and forward, they don't change. So they abstract think, ask a lot of questions as adolescents, but once they've established it, that's it for the rest of their lives pretty much. So engage in that conversation. This stuff matters. Adolescence matters. This is why you've brought me here as a youth pastor, because this stage of life matters a lot. All right, I spent a lot more time on that point than I was going to, and we're going to just quickly rush through the rest because they're just as important. Youth are seeking three things. They are seeking first identity. This is the question, who am I? Who am I? This is part of that abstract thinking as well. Who am I? What is the nature of me? What makes me me? They're asking, who am I? I'm not going to give an answer because I don't have a clue. Who am I? I think that somewhere that answer hopefully is found in who is God and what does that look like in my life. But who knows what that answer is going to be? And so in this stage of who am I, kids start experimenting with various identities. They will start trying out all sorts of things, and they tend not to commit to any one thing too firmly because they're trying to just figure out who I am. It's during this phase that they may actually suspend. So when they're actually looking at identity, this is when they will suspend their morality and their beliefs in order to test out different identities. So maybe I won't be the Christian with the good morals who always listens. I'm going to try out the partier. I'm going to try out the pro athlete. I'm going to try out the super nerd who doesn't shower. Just teenagers, just save us all the trouble. I'm going to start carrying deodorant at the entrance to the church and you show up for youth group and deodorant you. Shower, darn it. Oh, your bodies are changing. Shower. Okay, so adults, you should shower too. But teenagers, man, there's something about you. Just help us all. But that's this phase. They're seeking identity. Who am I? The next thing that they're seeking is autonomy. And autonomy is quite interesting. And now the next two actually feed into identity. But the next thing is that they're seeking is autonomy. And the question here is, how am I unique? What makes me an individual? What specific contribution do I have to give to this world that nobody else really has? Or that only a small group of people have? What's my unique contribution? How do I matter? Autonomy is an incredibly crucial question. And actually, your teenager's generation, the teens in this room right now, the teens of our current generation coming up through high school, their number one thing that they care about is how do I matter and how do I contribute? Advertising right now is not anymore about, look how awesome this is. You can come to it. Look at the cool, awesome games or the giant earth ball that we have that you can kill people with because it totally like breaks necks. It happens. Check out how cool our program is and how big and awesome it is. That doesn't attract anymore to teenagers. That's not attractive. We don't attract them anymore by saying, come here, we'll fix all your problems. We'll change you. If you come here, we have the answers that you've been asking for. That doesn't attract teenagers. The number one most attractive thing to teenagers right now is come here and we'll tell you how you can help us change the world. If you want to be part of the change that happens in this world, if you want to contribute to something bigger than you, this is the place. And teenagers, maybe you can tell me whether I'm right or wrong here, but that is probably the most attractive advertisement to you these days. Yeah? I'm getting some nods? Okay. So they are so much more focused on what can they contribute. What's our unique contribution to the world? And you want youth to come out to a program you run? Hey, guys, come on out to this program. We're going to make a difference. our youth group on Friday nights here is approximately 30 kids. Half of those kids come to what I call Core 12, which is the leaders of the youth who make a difference within the youth group. So Core 12 is like the inner workings of the youth group of youth. So it's made up of teenagers. It's a team of teenagers who decide the direction of the whole youth group. And half and sometimes more than half of our whole youth group come out to Core 12 because they want to come and make a difference in something. And that's what Core 12 is all about. That is the most attractive thing to them. That is so important. How do I matter? How am I unique? That's autonomy. And the last thing they're seeking is the opposite of autonomy. And these things are at odds inside of themselves. And that these things together in a tension form identity. And so this is very interesting. And it says they are seeking affinity. Affinity, which means where do I fit in? Where do I fit in? Are there others who are like me? Is there anyone out there who's like me? How do I fit into this world? What role am I going to play that's accepted? How will I be? Oh, did I just cut out? That's cool. Significant change all of a sudden. Now I know what Chris hears when he's back here and is cutting out every two words. Anyways, this is the stuff that they're going through. They're changing physically, cognitively. They're seeking out identity, autonomy, and affinity. And these things are all at odds within the life of the teenager from about age 12 to age 18 or 20-ish. Now, during these days, it is an easy and common tendency for parents and adults to choose to back off. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Oh, whatever. That's fine. It's a very common tendency for parents to back off in this stage. Teens are scary. There's an explosion, and a lot of the time when there's an explosion of anything, you want to get out of the way. So we tend to duck and hide and run and pull back. This is not the time to pull back. This is the time to really get engaged. This is the point in the life of a person and a young person and your children that you can really get engaged. Know what they're up to. Know what they're talking about. Know what they're studying. Know what they're into. Know what memes are. Get on the internet. Find out what they're looking at. Find out what is influencing them. Come talk to me about what we do at youth group, what kind of influences we have here. Come and be part of that influence if you'd like to be. You got to talk to me and pass an interview and everything else, but come talk to me. Be part of that influence. Help establish a healthy influence. Don't run away, parents. Get engaged. If you're not a parent and you've been a parent to teens and you're no longer a parent anymore, they're, you know, well, you don't cease to be a parent, I guess. And I get in trouble for saying that too. If you're not currently actively parenting a teenager, but you have, you are such a powerful and incredible resource to the rest of us who are getting there. Boy, am I ever going to be looking up to you guys when my kids are getting to that age. Youth pastor does not mean great teenager parent, okay? Youth pastor means probably teenagers rebelling against everything that I stand for. So I'm going to be looking for some help from you who have gone ahead. And those who are parents right now of teenagers are looking for help for those who have gone ahead. If you are one who has already had kids and teenagers and that's past now, share your wisdom with us. Come get involved in what we do with our adolescents. You are so valuable and useful in our youth group, in our church, and with our young people. Man, are you ever useful. The most powerful leaders I've ever had in any youth group were the leaders who were already retired and had kids and grandkids and great-grandkids. They were the most powerful youth leaders I've ever had in any youth group. The most powerful youth leader in my life was Stu. He was 76, and he played full contact football with us when I was a teen, and he wrecked us. That guy was incredible. But on top of that, he had such a deep passion and heart for God that it was hard for any of us to ever believe anything other than that when we were in his presence. Because man, was he unshakable in his faith. And that guy was a significant leader in our youth group for 10, 11 years before he finally had to slow down a bit. Incredible. Incredible leaders. My final word to you is this, and it's actually written in the sermon notes if you don't hear me say this. I want to be your partner and your ally. I'm here to help. I'm here to assist in the life and the growth of the teenagers as well as the life and the growth of the parents. I truly, desperately care to see teenagers do well and to come out with an image of Christ as their norm. So if you have any questions, any thoughts, need a place that's safe to just vent or rant, if you need any kind of information about what's going on in the mind of an adolescent, I can't tell you how to parent, but this is my field of study. I have a ton of books I can give you to read, or we can just talk. You can unload on me, and it will not leave the room. Between you and me, it's just you and me. And I won't tell your kids what you think of them. use me. I'm a resource for you. Feel free to come and talk to me at any point about, well, anything really, but especially adolescence and that kind of stuff. That's really my area. So with that, I think I'm done. I'm going to pray. We'll call up the music team, and we'll finish the morning. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, thank you so much for your example as the one who was obedient to the Father so that we can learn to also be obedient to our parents. And God, thank you so much for being the example to us parents, the one who equipped and prepared and enabled the Son to do as he did, to sacrifice as he did, that we might also learn how to be the correct parents who can equip and empower and enable our children to be successful image bearers of you. Lord, I pray that you give us the courage as parents to meet this challenge head on, to step into their lives, to engage with them, especially in the ages of the adolescent shift, as it were, as they're developing. Lord, give us the courage to step in. Give us the courage to get involved. Give us the courage to find out what they're really being influenced by and what they're looking at online and what they're involved in there, what kind of influences they're getting from school and what kind of things they're learning from their friends. Lord, help us have the courage to get involved, to not run away. Lord, for the teens, I pray that you would give them the courage to stand firm as image bearers of you, to show their friends the strongest act of evangelism they could ever do is to obey their parents. What a message that sends. And Lord, I just pray that you would help our youth to have the courage to obey and to be examples to their friends and to bear your image in their schools, proudly, courageously. So Lord, I just thank you again for giving us that example. Lord, help us to live by it. We pray this in your name. Amen.